Welcome to the Appleseed, where we bring you and your family great stories from great storytellers. And on today's episode, we'll hear a story from Noah Baum, a storyteller from the Washington, D.C. area.
But for me, for his beloved daughter, my father was willing to risk his life and enter an American freeway.
And then we'll hear from Dolores Hydock, a storyteller from Alabama.
As soon as he saw me, he sat back, looked up at me with these bright green eyes as if to say, I think it's your turn to look after me now.
I'm your host, Sam Payne, and today we're telling stories about parents and the sometimes complicated, strange, and wonderful ways they show up in our lives. We'll start with Noah Baum, who shares a family story here about her Israeli parents coming to America to meet their new grandchild. Here's Love Comes in Strange Packages, recorded live in our Appleseed studio. Here's Noah.
Thank you. Now, I don't know about you, but my parents used to drive me crazy. See, the world, according to my mother, is divided into two major groups. There is those whose fault it is, and her. And she spends most of her life telling you all about it, and especially about the one whose fault it always is, my father. Now, my father's world is a little more complicated than that. See, his main goal in life is to be left alone, in peace and quiet, to contemplate. He abhors any form of conflict, so he spends most of his life pacifying and avoiding, especially my mother. Now, if anyone would have told me this story, I would have said, pure fiction. Could not happen. But friends, I was there, and this is what happened. It was the summer of 1991, and I had just given birth to my first baby. My parents came all the way from Jerusalem, Israel, to Davis, California, for the birth of their first grandchild and to help. It was one of those lovely days in Davis, California, when the temperature reaches a gentle 115 Fahrenheit in the shade. My baby was 3 days old, and my mother was helping. No? Are you coming to eat? What are you doing? I made you a salad. I cut it very small for you. Oh, what are you doing? Are you nursing again? I am telling... Oh, look at the poonim. Look at the face of this baby. So beautiful. But I'm telling you, you pick her up the minute she whimpers. You are not letting her cry. She needs to develop her lungs. I'm telling you, you nurse all night. You are spoiling the baby. By noon, I was praying for divine intervention. Or at the very least, earplugs. By 2 p.m., I was ready to throw myself off the roof, but to spare my newborn the future of being a motherless child, I decide to send my mother to the mall. I figure it's about 20, 30 minutes each way, at least an hour. I gave her a long list. That's almost 2 hours of peace and quiet. It's priceless. Now, my mother refuses to drive in America, so she recruits my father. Now, my father is a retired university professor, extremely brilliant and very quick when it comes to thinking, reading, writing, but all other walks of this world, the chief among them driving, fall into a hazy twilight zone of slow motion. And the more stressed he is, the slower he functions. Now, he has never driven our 1985 Ford Tempo manual drive. He has not been on an American highway for more than 20 years. But for me, for his beloved daughter, my father was willing to risk his life and enter an American freeway. And so they were out the door, both of them. And I was enjoying the first 10 minutes of quiet since the birth of my baby when the door burst open and my mother storms in. Effo, where is he? What? Where could he be? Wait, didn't you just both walk out to the parking lot? No, I'm telling you, this man, he's driving me crazy. We went down to the parking lot. I opened the back door of the car to put my head on the windowsill, and it was so hot in there. It was like a furnace in there. I said to him, turn on the air conditioner. You know, you have to tell him everything. I was so angry. I slammed the door. I sat on the sidewalk in the shade to wait for the car to cool down. And he starts to drive. I thought he's turning the car around, but I've been sitting there now for 10 minutes. Where could he be? Wait a minute. What do you mean he starts to drive? Did he say where he's going? How should I know? I'm sitting on the sidewalk. But did he see that you... What is there to see? It was like a furnace in there. Who can sit in such heat? But did you tell... What is there to tell? I said, turn on the air conditioner. And I could just see it. I could just see the picture slowly zooming into focus. My father's head barely visible above the wheel. His hands gripping so tight the knuckles are white with tension. He dares not let go, not even to push the glasses that are sliding down his sweaty nose. My father is bracing himself to enter the American freeway hell. And so it was close to an hour later that the door opened and my father walks in. Oh, Efoat, where are you? Where are you? I drove to the mall. I parked the car and I turned around and you're not there. You only noticed I wasn't in the car when you parked in the mall. Well, I noticed it was a little quiet in the back. But Kukile, I was driving on the freeway. My husband was laughing so hard, he was practically sprawled on the floor. But of course, these were not his parents. All I wanted was to scream, why, oh, why am I related to this dysfunctional duo? And at that moment, my baby stopped nursing and looked up at me with big wonder in her eyes. And my mother said, oish, oish, look at the bonim, look at the face, she's smiling. She is not smiling, Ima. She is 3 days old. She is smiling. She's smiling at her grandmother. You tell her, you are the university professor of child development. Objectively speaking, is she smiling or not? Objectively speaking, of course she's smiling. She is precocious. And I looked at them, the two familiar faces peering over my baby. His pacifying demeanor, her righteous anger, transforming right before me into the loving glow of naches. Naches. It's a wonderful Yiddish word. It means when the heart is so full, it's just overflowing with love and joy. His hand slightly resting on her shoulder, her head gently tilted towards him. My completely impossible, totally crazy, joined at the hip, naches-filled parents, till death do them part. What could I possibly say? I looked at my baby and I said, baby, love comes in all sorts of strange packages. Meet your grandparents. Welcome to the world. Welcome to the world. Thank you.
That was Noah Baum with her story called Love Comes in Strange Packages. And listening to this story reminds me, actually not of a parent, but of a grandparent, my grandfather. My grandfather was a hard old cuss, a World War II soldier who came home from the war and became a high school band teacher and a trumpet player. And he had a hard time with expressions of love. I mean, I look back now on one thing or another that I didn't understand about my relationship with my grandfather as a kid, and I wonder, was that, whatever it was, his love speaking to me? It was tough to tell sometimes. My grandfather's love came in kind of a strange package, the package of this hard old cuss. And as I think about that, there's a story about my grandfather that these days means a great deal to me. In this story, my grandmother had been fighting for a long time against the difficulties of Alzheimer's. She wasn't living at home anymore, but at a place where she could get around-the-clock care. And my grandfather spent countless hours by her bedside and communicating with her doctors and getting information to family members. And all that time, my grandmother slipped very slowly further and further away from him and from all of us. And then one day, the phone call came from her hospice workers. It's a call that a lot of people get. It goes something like this. Someone on the phone says, "Your loved one," in this case, Ruby, the name of my grandmother, "isn't doing well. I think you should come as soon as you can." It's not much more detailed than that, really. But you get that call, and you know the time is getting close. Maybe you or someone you know has gotten that call. I have. Anyway, my grandfather did. And after he put the phone down, he paused for a moment. And before he went to the car to drive to the place where my grandmother lay in her last hours, he went to his closet and he picked out his best Sunday suit. And he took off what he was wearing and he put that suit on before he went to hold my grandmother's hand while she passed away. Love comes in strange packages sometimes. And I think I'll remember that image of my grandfather sitting next to my grandmother's bed, wearing his best suit for the rest of my life. Strangely, maybe, that's where Noah's story took me. Where did the story take you? And who will you take along?
I want to introduce you to another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show, and it's hosted by comedian, believer, actress, single mother, Lisa Valentine Clark. The Lisa Show delves into the multitude of challenges and relationships that shape our lives, whether it's parenting, mental health questions, social issues. She and her council of moms will tackle it. She'll help you figure out this thing called life. With a lot of laughs along the way, Lisa is a great person to hang around with. The Lisa Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.
It's a pleasure to be with you today on The Appleseed, and we're ready to welcome our second storyteller, Dolores Hydock, who shares memories here of her mom that have stuck around long after her mom's passing. Her story is called Reincarnated as a Cat, and it was recorded live in the Appleseed studio. Here's Dolores.
Thank you so much.
I think my mother has been reincarnated as a cat. My mother did not like cats. It would be fair to say my mother hated cats. If she saw a cat, if somebody mentioned the word cat, she would go, pff, 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 as if just thinking about a cat could make cat hair leap into her mouth. We never had a cat when I was growing up. We never had any kind of pet when I was growing up. My mother would say, "Pets? Pets require time, food, money, attention. There are four children in this house who need time, food, money, attention. What do we need with a pet?" So no gerbils, no hamsters, no goldfish, no parakeets, no dogs, no cats. I think my mother hated cats most of all. And now I think she's come back as one. My mother spent the last 8 months of her life living in my house under hospice care. 2 years before that happened, she had left her lifetime home in Pennsylvania to move at the age of 83, to move to Birmingham, Alabama, to live closer to me. And when she got to town, we found her a sweet little house not too far from where I live. She loved that house. It had a fireplace, a skylight, a shady patio. She loved living there, was so happy there for 2 years. And then out of the blue came this terrible diagnosis. And when she came out of the hospital, she did not need to be in that little house by herself as much as she loved living there. And so she moved into my house. We took the front bedroom that had always been my office and made that her room, moved in her armchair, her desk, her television. We put the hospital bed along the big long wall with a big window so that she could look out at the porch swing behind the window, see the trees behind the swing, the sun behind the trees. Every morning when I would wake up, I would look down that hallway toward that window. She would always be up before me, no matter what time I got up, no matter how early it was. She was always already awake, sitting up, eyes bright, looking right at me, ready to start the day. The window behind her, the swing behind the window, the trees behind the swing, the sun behind the trees. As we kind of settled into our new routine, I wanted her days to be just as normal as possible. And so I would leave her most of the day to herself. She had her desk and her stationery. She could write letters back to her friends in Pennsylvania. She could phone her new buddies in Birmingham. She could watch Jeopardy and reruns of Murder, She Wrote. I thought things were working out great. Me doing what I needed to do in my part of the house and her spending her days pretty much the way she would have spent them if she was still back in that little house that she liked so much. And then one day she said to me, "I need you to spend more time with me." She said, I know we have meals together, and every now and then you'll watch a movie with me, but I need us to spend more time that's just us, just together. It wasn't said in an angry kind of way or accusing way or a demanding way or whiny kind of way. It was just sort of matter of fact, just kind of, here's some information, might be of some use to you. If you can do something with it, great. If not, that's okay too. I need you to spend more time with me. I was astonished. I was stunned. I mean, my mother was so independent, so curious about everything, so perfectly capable of entertaining herself. She read 2 newspapers a day. She always checked out a stack of books from the library. She kept up a lively correspondence with a raft of friends. But she wouldn't have said something like that if she didn't mean it. And so I tried to be more conscious about checking in on her now and then to see if she wanted to spend time together. Sometimes she didn't. I want to finish this letter to Aunt Eleanor, but sometimes she did. And if she did, we might play a great game of cribbage or finish up that morning's crossword puzzle. Or if it was a pretty day, we might go sit in the white Adirondack chairs out in the yard, sit there and look at the trees and the birds. Sometimes we'd sit out there and she'd tell me stories, family stories. She told me about her grandmother, my great-grandmother, who was a midwife in the 1930s and wore her hair pulled up tight into a bun right on top of her head, the secret old-world Eastern European symbol of her illegal midwifing profession. And so the women in the neighborhood would see the midwife topknot and know that they could call on her when they needed her help. Or she told me about her grandfather, who lost a leg in an accident at the factory where he worked and had a wooden leg that itched and scratched. And on hot summer nights, he would go sit on the front porch steps and unhook that wooden leg and rub that stump. And when the neighborhood boys came around and gave him a hard time, he'd pick up that wooden leg and shake it at them to scare them away. I hadn't heard her tell those stories in a long time. Sometimes I would practice my stories on her. She liked the stories that had her in them. She said to me once, "I like who I am in your stories." But most of the time, we'd just be there. Not doing anything special, not talking about deep, meaningful things. We were just there. I would love to tell you that I was always patient, always generous with my time and attention, but I was not. I was frequently fretful and anxious about emails I had to return and calls I had to make. I'm sure Mother sensed that, and though she never said anything directly about it, her calm, quiet presence seemed to say, "Work will wait. Errands will wait. They will always be there. But the ones you love, the ones who love you, won't." So sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, you need to just stop and be there with those you care about. It was months after she died before I was able to move my office back into that room, replace her pretty desk with my practical one, replace her flowered stationery with my reams of copy paper. But finally, I did. And one November afternoon late, I was working back there. It was about maybe 6 months after she had died. I was working at the computer, and I heard someone knocking at the back. No, not knocking. Pounding on the back door. Pound, 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 pound. I thought, gosh, 5:30 in the afternoon. It's kind of late for the UPS guy. I wasn't expecting anything. Pound, 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 pound. Well, I went to see what this was about. I have two back doors there in the kitchen. There's the inside door. It's wood on the bottom and glass on top, and then an all-glass storm door. I looked through the top glass. I didn't see anybody, but I could hear it. Pound, 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 pound. I opened the inside door, and there was a cat, a pure white cat, standing on his back legs and with his front paws just wailing on that storm door. Pound, 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 pound. As soon as he saw me, he sat back, looked up at me with these bright green eyes, as if to say, "It's your turn to take care of me now." It wasn't said in an accusing kind of way or a demanding kind of way or angry or whiny sort of way. It was just matter of fact, just kind of, "Here's some information that might be useful to you. If you can do something with it, great. If not, that's okay too. It's your turn to take care of me now." I'd seen this cat in the neighborhood for years. I mean, it is hard to miss a pure white stray cat. Everybody in the neighborhood knew him. The little girl across the street used to play with him all the time. In fact, she had these pastel-colored chalks. She would make designs on the sidewalk in front of their house. One day, the white cat came and rolled around in her artwork and then walked off looking like a walking ball of cotton candy at the county fair, all pink and blue and yellow and green. But that little girl and her family had moved to Illinois a few years ago. And then the white cat had taken up with Jason and Casey. They lived on that side of me. And Jason and Casey had three cats of their own. So they just pretty much left out this all-day, all-you-can-eat cat food buffet in the backyard. And you'd usually find the white cat there. But Jason and Casey had just moved to Nashville 2 weeks earlier and had not taken the white cat with them. And whatever other plan that cat had to charm his way into some new meal ticket had not worked out. And he was stuck with Plan B. Me. I didn't know anything about cats except how hairy they are. But it was November. It was getting cold, getting dark, getting late. Those green eyes said, "Feed me." So I did. There was a can of tuna in the pantry. I raked it into a bowl with a chip on the lip, took it outside. Quick licks of that pink tongue, that tuna fish was gone. And moments later, tail in the air, so was the cat. That was our first encounter. He was back for breakfast, back for supper, back for breakfast, back for supper. And after about a week, I guess once he decided I was trainable, he kind of moved in, not into the house. He wouldn't come in the house. "Oh, don't fence me in, baby." He wouldn't go near the $27 cat cave I bought for him. Oh, no. But my backyard was his estate. And I got in the habit of kind of looking for him. He would eat at the back door. He would sleep on the front porch swing. Every morning, I'd wake up. I'd look down toward that window. He would always be up before me. No matter how early I got up, he was always already awake, sitting up there on the swing, eyes bright, looking back at me, ready to start his day. The swing behind the window, the trees behind the swing, the sun behind the... There was something really familiar about this. This was just like my mother. Had my mother come back as a cat? Well, as I said, the cat kind of took over the whole outside yard, and every now and then I would check in on him, see if he wanted attention, wanted some company. Sometimes he didn't. I mean, there were squirrels and lizards way more entertaining than I was. But sometimes he did. And if he did, I might go sit in the white Adirondack chairs there in the yard. He'd jump in my lap, would look at the trees and the birds. He was a lot more interested in the birds than the trees. Sometimes I'd practice my stories on him. I practiced this story on him. I guess he liked it okay. I mean, he didn't jump off my lap and run away. Maybe he likes who he is in my stories. My sisters just roll their eyes when I say I've been sitting with the cat. Don't you have anything more important to do? Well, yes and no. Because what if it really is my mother? I know, it can't be. Can it? No. But the cat's independence and curiosity reminds me so much of her, makes her feel so present, so close. And if her bright spirit still wants to spend more time with me, how lucky I am to be able to do that. The cat's calm, quiet presence reminds me, just as hers did, that sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes you need to just stop and just be there with those you care about, because work will wait, errands will wait, they will always be there. But the ones you love, the ones who love you, the ones who come pounding on your door wanting you to spend time with them, won't. Unless, like my mother, they get 8 more lives by being reincarnated as a cat.
Maybe love and parents really do come in some strange packages, each with their own way of showing love. A big thank you to Noah Baum and Dolores Hydock for their wonderful stories. We hope that these stories bring memories of your own parents and other loved ones, that you'll pass them along to the people you love, because at the Appleseed, we believe that sharing and listening to great stories can change your family's world.
The Appleseed is produced by Wendy Folsom,
Sam Payne,
and Brian Tanner.
Our audio engineers are Ashton Parkinson
and Carly Wilson.
The rest of the Appleseed team is Kelly Wehrmeister,
Trent Horton,
Evadane Hendricks,
Miriam Irsay,
and Tristan Schetzel.
A special thanks to the subscribers of our podcast who rate us or leave reviews.
You help people find the show.
We also love to receive emails at theappleseed@byu.edu.
Your thoughts and comments help us to shape the future of the Appleseed.
We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family.
And you can find episodes of the Appleseed wherever podcasts are found, on the BYU Radio app or at byuradio.org/appleseed.
I'm Sam Payne, and the whole team can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed.